We already mentioned how last Sunday was our annual Christmas pageant, and it was wonderful. It's always one of my favorite Sundays of the year. Yet I must confess that I'm always a little bit nervous going into the pageant, but I'm learning that I don't really need to be. Last week we had some issues with our sound system, and we never did have a chance to run through the entire script with the whole cast, and yet everything turned out beautifully. And I can think of other years when I was fretful right before a pageant, and everything turned out fine. In fact, some of the most memorable moments of Christmas pageants are when things don't go according to plan. There's a story about an innkeeper who dutifully delivers his lines, "There is no room in the inn." And as the Holy Family turns away to go toward the manger, the innkeeper suddenly interjects, "But you can stay in my room." There's another story about a pageant where the angel tells the shepherds to go to Bethlehem. And a 2-year-old child in the congregation says, "Okay, let's go." And if you're a fan of children's literature, you probably know Barbara Robinson's wonderful book, The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, in which a family of 6 delinquent children, aptly named Herdmen, because they moved together in a herd, hijack a children's Christmas pageant, taking all the choice roles by intimidation and force. And as the performance degenerates into chaos, Gladys, the youngest Herdman, who plays the angel announcing the Messiah's birth to the shepherds, yells out over all the cacophony and chaos, "Hey, unto you a child is born." It's the unexpected moments that often make the Christmas pageants most memorable. Now, if we could go back in time, some 500 or 600 years, we would be able to witness a very different kind of Christmas pageant that was inspired by Mary's Magnificat. According to scholar and author Max Harris, Mary's song inspired the Feast of Fools, a name variously given to all or part of the Christian revels that were celebrated for centuries throughout the church. The Feast of Fools, in fact, became a literal acting out of the Magnificat, a witness to the God whose intention is to topple human power structures and to raise the downtrodden to a position of honor and feasting. And here I'm quoting Max Harris directly. As early as the 9th century, a mock patriarch was elected in Constantinople, burlesquing the Eucharist and riding through the city streets on a donkey. And as late as Innocent's Day, December 28, 1685, in the Franciscan Church of Antibes, lay brothers and servants put on the vestments inside out, held the books upside down, wore spectacles with rounds of orange peel instead of glasses, blew the ashes from the censers on each other's face and hands, and instead of the proper liturgy, chanted confused and inarticulate gibberish. Masking as animals, wafting foul-smelling incense, and electing burlesque bishops, popes, and patriarchs mocked conventional human pretensions. So did the introduction of a donkey into the church in commemoration of the Holy Family's flight into Egypt and the braying of priest, choir, and congregation during Mass. And here ends my quote from Max Harris. Now, I do understand that there's been a live donkey before here in the sanctuary at Covenant. Am I right? And was that Christmas and Palm Sunday, or one of the other? Well, here's another question. So we had a donkey in the sanctuary, but did everyone bray? No? Now, I have to admit that preaching a sermon like this, for me, feels a little bit risky, because I realize that someone hearing the sermon might be hurting or deeply grieving, and a preacher talking about the antics of medieval churchgoers might not be particularly helpful to someone who is desperately seeking to hear good news, some word of hope. And for those of you who are deeply grieving, are deeply troubled for whatever reason, You are one of the very ones that Mary sings about when she proclaims that God lifts up all those who yearn for God and all those whose spirits are low. You are not one of the ones being made fun of or lampooned. Instead, in the words of Psalm 113, you are one of the ones being raised from the dust. That's the promise. And for all those who don't feel like laughing now, there is the prospect of a deeper kind of laughter that arises from the well of a joyful heart that has also known grief and sadness. Mary's revolutionary song is good news for the poor because it promises a reversal of fortune in their favor. And at first, it sounds like very bad news for the rich. But ultimately, it's good news for them as well, because it's an opportunity to discover that there are riches that are greater than wealth. And if it takes a medieval reveler poking fun at us to help us realize that, then so be it. If you are at all worried that you're not quite ready for Christmas, if you're at all concerned that you're not going to pull off that perfect Christmas this year, you could try braying like a donkey or doing something else that will help you take yourself a little less seriously, or a lot less seriously. Whether or not all the Christmas cards get mailed, Christ is born. Whether or not the Christmas dinner is a culinary success, hey, unto you a child is born. Seminary professor Charles Campbell, who is one of my teachers in my doctoral program, writes that when churches get too serious, Mary's Magnificat can sound sourly prophetic and angry. Instead, the Sunday when we preach and sing Mary's Magnificat is an opportunity to play the fool, a fool for Christ's sake. It's a day to prepare for the incarnation by lampooning the powers that be, including the powers in the church, with the topsy-turvy news of the gospel, which is first celebrated by two pregnant women laughing and singing, and which enters the world through a young, unwed mother with a topsy, which, and a child laid in a manger because there was no room in the inn. All glory and praise be to our God. Amen.